Grays and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis, and I'm here again today, as we are each Sunday at noon, with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates PA, a law firm practicing community association law throughout Florida. As our listeners know, we're here each week to answer all of your calls and emails about the issues that make life in your condominium or HOA absolutely crazy from one minute to the next. As always, we would love to get the phone lines going early, answering all of your questions, so give us a call right here in our studio, 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. Or if you prefer to email us your questions, you can do so by visiting the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and by clicking on the Email the Show tab.
And, of course, even if you don't want to send us an email, you should still visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com, where you can listen to all of our past shows. You can sign up for our free seminars. We'll talk about that schedule. By the way, we put up a great new video so that everybody can actually see what the seminars are all about. Take a look at that. You can see who the show's sponsors are. You can visit all of their websites. You can link to our Facebook page. Number of fans keep growing and growing. You can link to our brand new HOA and condo blog at hoa-condoblog.com. Tomorrow's topic, fines and fining committees. Not a great place to win friends and influence people serving on any of those committees, that's for sure. You can also join our email list. You can get copies of our newsletters and receive other announcements about the show as they occur. And, of course, if you'd like to call our law firm directly and pick our brains off the air, you can call Glazer & Associates at 855, the number 4, Condo Craze. Again, 855-4 Condo Craze. And the law firm's website, condo-laws.com. Again, condo-laws.com. I see the phones are already ringing off the hook. But
you're
let's
popular.
Do this. Let's do this, though. We have to start off today with some exciting news before we get to the phone. We finally have bill numbers for our new HOA reform bills. And take down pen and paper, everybody. Here are the bill numbers in the Senate. It is Senate Bill 580 and Senate Bill 596. And Senator Hayes is our sponsor of the bill in the Florida Senate. And we will have two sponsors, actually, in the Florida House, Debbie Mayfield and Mike LaRosa. And for updates on the bill, just go to the website, HOAreformBill.net. Again, www.HOAreformBill, all one word, .net. And really quick, let's talk about what this legislation proposes and what all the buzz is about. I'll start it off. The big one, granting the DBPR, that's the Department of Business and Professional Regulation, finally the authority to regulate HOAs in the same manner as they do condo associations.
Makes sense.
Yeah, including allowing the DBPR to investigate complaints even against, dare I say it, developers.
Oh,
yes.
Oh boy.
And creating an office of the Community Association Ombudsman, just like condominium.
And we have Nan Green in the studio with us today from that office, so just hang in there. She'll be with us in a little while.
Yeah, Eric, one of the other things you're looking to get done here is adopting the same election procedures for HOAs that condos have.
Absolutely. How about requiring board members to get certified? I'd certainly like to see
yes.
that. Within 90 days of getting elected to the board, what's wrong with some education?
HOA people come to your Condo Craze board certification courses just because they want to know.
Absolutely. They'd like to learn something, of
absolutely.
Course.
Absolutely. Automatically removing directors or officers from the board if they are charged with a felony offense involving the association's funds.
Again, I want to stop here. Because over the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about a case in Orlando in an HOA where a president was caught stealing hundreds of thousands of dollars from the association and still continued to serve as president from prison. That's right. You heard me right. I understand he's been released now, but is still actually serving as president. And a lot of the unit owners have decided, you know what? We're just not going to send him our assessments anymore.
Boy, that guy's probably got a lot of juice. A lot of those mafia dons can't even keep up the control when they go to prison.
Yeah, actually, that's what I understand is happening, even as we speak. So again, condos already have that law. You get caught stealing in a condo while you're on the board, you are off until the charges are actually resolved one way or the other. And we'd certainly like to see that moved over to the HOA side as well.
Yeah, here's another law you're trying to get passed. It's preventing board members from getting kickbacks for awarding association contracts. And quite frankly, Eric, there's only one group of people that's against this law, people that get kickbacks.
Right, you would think.
Because
right?
even the people that give kickbacks aren't really looking forward to giving them.
Exactly.
You know, it's just the people that want kickbacks.
Again, something that's already found in the condo statutes. How about this one, preventing preventing owners from being charged with exorbitant photocopy fees for the association's official records. All of us today are walking around with cell phones that take pictures. Why should a unit owner be forced to pay expenses, photocopy expenses, if they can simply take out their camera, snap a picture of the records, and move on? Doesn't cost the association a penny to allow the unit owner to do that.
Just give them access.
Absolutely.
The new legislation would also make it easier for members of an HOA to demand turnover of the association from developer control.
Stories of associations being dominated by developer control, sometimes for decades. So, needless to say, we'd certainly like to see a situation where the people that live in the community get to govern themselves a lot sooner than they now have the ability to do so.
And finally, and you know, this is actually my favorite thing you're trying to get passed, and it might not be the favorite thing of some other people in our field, but my favorite thing is legislation that requires owners that are sued in court for unpaid assessments to simply deposit money in the court registry each month as the assessment comes due.
Yeah, and let's put a couple of things to bed here quickly. Yeah. By the way, if a unit owner contests that they owe the money, they are entitled to a hearing before the judge, and a judge will determine whether or not they have to put money in the court registry to begin with. That's what the bill actually says. So to make some silly argument that there's no due process doesn't make sense. How about reading the bill first and seeing that before a unit owner loses the right to any money, they are allowed to see a judge. They are entitled to due process. And only if a judge thinks the money should be put in the court registry, then the unit owner will be required to put the money in the court registry. But here's the irony of some of the opponents of the bill. They're taking the position that this is terrible. It violates due process, despite the fact that unit owners can go on for years with silly, self-serving defenses most of the time that have no merit whatsoever, quite frankly, and they wind up draining the association of necessary funds to pay bills, so everybody has to wind up paying a lot more than they're supposed to pay. Nobody wants to pay for their non-paying neighbor. So again, you get due process. But here's the irony. Over the last couple of years, Scott and I have said this, God knows how many times on the show, all of these laws that have been passed for the couple of years that says if a unit owner is delinquent in the payment of any monies that are due to the association for 90 days or more, Scott, what do they lose? They lose the right to use the common areas.
Yeah, and I believe you own a portion of the common areas.
Even though you own a portion of the common areas, you lose the right to use those common areas if...
Because a board member decided you don't have it. How does that due process?
Right. The board decides you're late for 90 days. The management company says you're late for 90 days. Without any due process whatsoever, without a right to any hearing whatsoever, you are prohibited from using the common areas. You are prohibited from voting, from actually participating in a democratic process of voting in your own election. You're prohibited from running on the board. You're prohibited from remaining on the board. But those people who help those laws get passed, apparently that's okay with them. All of those things that they push through happen without any due process to the unit owner whatsoever. Our bill, bottom line, the unit owner gets to see a judge. How's that for due process?
Sounds like
a lot better than kicking them off the board and not allowing them to use the common areas and not allowing them to vote in the elections without any due process.
Sounds like somebody
whatsoever.
Needs to go back to con law class.
You would think, right? But on that note, how about we go to Alan in Fort Lauderdale? How are you, Alan?
How you doing, guys? Good afternoon.
How can we help you?
I've got a situation here. I live in a 17-story housing co-op in Fort Lauderdale.
Okay.
In June of 2011, the board decided to spend expenses. It was a special assessment for several projects, one... piping the water under the or relining the piping for water runoff, pool resurfacing, installing condensate lines, and termite inspection. The total of the assessment was $275,000.
Okay.
They took $125,000 from reserves. My question is this. We were assessed $16,000 for condensate lines. Now, condensate lines are simply a runoff line for any central air unit because the city of Fort Lauderdale now mandates that we can't empty that into the sewage. It has to be runoff on the lawn or somewhere other than sewage. To date, that has not been installed. There's been three units that have had central air installed, and they have their own separate runoff lines, either with copper tubing or PVC piping or whatever. Whenever I ask the president, the members of the board, or the manager of the unit, I simply get a story that she was the manager had to do something with.
All right, Alan, let me try to answer your question quick because we're running out of time before our first break. Bottom line is, when a special assessment is passed, the funds have to be used for the very specific purpose for which they were intended. So if you had a special assessment and a portion of that special assessment was specifically designed for, I'm looking at my notes, for condensation lines, then
right,
that $16,000 must be used for the condensation lines because that's what it was passed for. If it was not used for that specific purpose, it has to either be returned to the unit owners or credited towards a future assessment. Okay, so absolutely without exception, if they can't, the board can't prove that that's what the funds were used for, you either have it coming back to you or credited again as a towards future assessments. Okay.
Now this is 719. This is not 720.
Understand?
This
I believe that's code. Understand, but I believe the same rule would apply under 719. I'll check it out under the co-op statute. But again, can't pass a special assessment. Can't imagine that even under the co-op statute, you can pass a special assessment for one thing and use it for something completely different. Okay.
It's not very special.
Absolutely
then.
Not. How about we go to Judy? How are you, Judy?
Hi, I'm fine. How are you today?
All right. How can we help you?
Yes. Our association, we have a board member that rented all three of our recreation districts' clubhouses.
What do you mean he rented them? Well, what do you mean he rented them?
He put a deposit down to rent all three rec centers for 12 days.
Okay.
In the evening.
Okay.
To prevent other board members from having a meet and greet candidates night.
Okay, so in other words, there's policies and procedures in place where you can kind of rent out the clubhouse areas for a fee. And this particular
yes.
board member paid that fee and rented it
yes.
out for 12 nights. Man, that guy should be president.
All three of them.
There's a smart guy, let me tell you, yeah. Well, again, if that was allowed under the condo rules, and you know there's no mm-hmm. prohibition, then the guy apparently is a politician that's born and bred to do that. I mean that's kind of good thinking, quite frankly. Don't give your opponent the opportunity to even talk to the other people. Sounds pretty smart. What do you think, Scott?
I think it's smart. I mean, you know, you don't have unless there's something in your declaration or bylaws that says you are mandated to have a meet and greet night, which I seriously doubt there is.
Right.
This guy, you know, he just worked the system properly.
Right. Looks like you're going to have that meet and greet somewhere else, or from now on, obviously, don't
Jumping.
Allow somebody to do that for 12
Big
consecutive
footed.
Nights in all the different rec areas that are available to be rented.
You get there first.
Thanks, Judy. But let's do this. Let's take our first break of the hour, and when we get back, we're going to talk to Nan Green from the Florida Condominium Ombudsman's Office about the election nightmares that we encounter this time of year and from time to time. Taking your calls, 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
And HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis again with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer and Associates, taking your phone calls at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. And by the way, if you have a product or service that would be beneficial to our listeners and want to be a guest on the show, attend our monthly seminars where you'll meet hundreds of different associations, be listed on the show's website, have a commercial spot during each week's show. You can become a sponsor of the show. Just visit the show's Condos website at condocrazeandhoas.com and send us a quick email.
All right. And as we said before, the new legislation that we are proposing would require HOA board members to also get certified, just like members of a condo board. And one way condo board members can get certified is by attending our Condo Craze board member certification course. And now we've certified over 3,500 Floridians who are now eligible to serve on a Florida condominium board. Again, the course, everybody, it's fun. It's free. We serve food. You get to ask questions. You leave with a summary of everything you learned and even a real nice certificate.
That's right. And with election season now in full swing, this is definitely the time to come down and learn about your duties, people. All board members, you can come down and learn about budgets and reserves, financial reporting, all the board meeting procedures you have to know, and a lot more. And as we said, we even added some new information this year about making material alterations to common elements. We've added information about competitive bidding for contracts and even what to do when people want an emotional support animal in their condo. So don't miss a real great opportunity to come and learn about a whole lot of things. And if you want to see some pictures of past seminars, you can just visit our Facebook page.
Right. And even again, even on condocrazeandhoas.com, we have a great new video if you want to see what it's all about. And the number of seminars that we do around the state keeps growing. We'll be in West Palm Beach coming up, actually, on February 27th at 8 a.m. at the PM Expo event at the West Palm Beach Fairgrounds. Again, that's February 27th, 8 a.m. March 23rd at 10 a.m. we'll be in Bonita Springs, Florida's West Coast, at the Hyatt Regency. And finally, on April 18th, we'll be at the Tampa Bay Condo and HO Expo in Tampa, Florida. But here is some big news, too, and we'll announce it right now. Plans are also in the works, really, for a really unique event in May. And we're going to have a board member certification course at the Hard Rock in Hollywood on a Sunday morning. And that's going to be followed by the Condo Craze and HOA's radio show live before a studio audience at the Hard Rock at noon. And all of our sponsors will be there as well. There's going to be educational courses, again, taught throughout the day. And I got to tell you, we really look forward to packing the house and to have our listeners actually sit in on the radio show live and have their voices heard on the air. More details we're going to announce probably next week as, again, we get the finishing touches in place. But this event, I can tell you, should be a lot of fun. Those of you, again, who want to actually see the radio show, watch the magic, right? Live and in person.
It'll be awesome.
It'll be awesome. We really want everybody to come down, take a look at what we do, participate on the show, and actually you can get board certified before that, attend educational courses throughout the day, and of course, all of it will be free. For further information, just go to condocrazeandhoas.com to sign up for any of our events, and Brian, our office manager, will let you know that you are, in fact, registered. And as a matter of fact, since we're on the topic of education, I just want to say a big thank you to our sponsor, Best Roofing, for helping to coordinate a fantastic event this past Thursday in Hialeah. We had a great turnout for the board cert class at 10 a.m., and the rest of that day also was followed by seminars, about roofing, electrical repair, driveway maintenance, plumbing, and lots more. Really great class for those of us like me who don't know how to turn a screwdriver. But yeah, lots of board members showed up to not only learn the law, but again, to learn how to take care of their condo or HOA that they live in. And everybody who attended really had a great time and learned a lot. So again, thanks to Best Roofing for putting that in place.
Well, last show, we had Kathleen Lowe as our guest from Best Roofing. We spoke about a Michigan Supreme Court judge who got herself into really hot water because of a Florida short sale. And we spoke about a very important decision of the Florida 3rd District Court of Appeals.
That's right, Karen. And that court decision was pretty big news. To remind everyone, the 3rd District Court of Appeal ruled that if an association forecloses on a unit and takes back title, the eventual new owner of that unit does not owe anything to the condo association, even if that new owner is someone who buys the unit at a bank foreclosure sale.
Yeah, and this was a big case, but I got to say this. This is the exact advice we were giving to our client for years on end now. And in fact, attorney Ralph Rocco in our office, he actually pulled an article from 2008 from the Daily Business Review, where he was quoted as warning associations about this, again in 2008, that this is the law, and if they foreclose on a unit and take back title, that ledger goes to zero. So again, while it may not be a popular opinion really, don't blame the court for that decision. The court simply really just interpreted the statute as it was drafted, and if you're angry about that situation, that ledger does go back to zero because the association becomes that intervening owner, blame the legislature, quite frankly, which allowed the law to be drafted that way. Pick up the phone. Again, this is the time of year to do it and demand that it gets changed.
All right. So I understand we have yet another fantastic guest on the show today.
Absolutely. And I think they're lining up already to talk to you, Nan. And we have with us today Nan Green. Let's welcome again to Condo Crazy and HOA's Nan Green, an election monitor that's routinely appointed by the Florida Condominium Ombudsman's Office to oversee condominium elections. Welcome to the show, Nan.
Thank you, Eric. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. For those of you who actually want to take a peek at the Florida statute that we're going to be spending some time about today and are playing along at home, take a look at the Florida statute 718.5012. Again, 718.5012. That's the statute that actually creates the Office of the Condominium Ombudsman and spells out the powers that the Ombudsman's Office actually has. And again, it's no secret that this year, you know, this time of year, people that live in a condominium association, you know, perhaps they simply don't trust the election process that takes place in their condo. And I guess that's where you come in, Nan.
That's right, Eric. The statute says the 15% of the total voting interests in a condominium association or six unit owners, whichever is greater, may petition the ombudsman's office to appoint an election monitor to attend the actual meeting of the unit owners and conduct the election of directors.
All right. So you get 15% of the people to get together, sign this petition, and your office automatically, statute kicks you in there and you get to decide what goes on at that election. But, you know, needless to say, appointees, at least this time of year, appointees from the Condominium Ombudsman's Office must be attending elections all over the state. This is a statewide thing that you guys are allowed to do, obviously.
Yes, and it is a really crazy busy time. Since Florida, for the most part, is a snowbird state, a majority of the annual elections for the Board of Directors are held during the season.
Yeah, and we are definitely in season, I guess. Now, how does it start out? You know, how do the unit owners actually go about preparing a petition to have the Ombudsman's Office get involved? Is it something like a form that they go to the DBPR's website or the Condominium Ombudsman's website and print and, you know, just pass it around the condo? How does it start?
Well, generally, an individual called the petitioner will get in touch with either the DBPR or the Ombudsman's Office and ask for help. But they can go online, and the form can be found on the Internet. And any unit owner, really, who's interested in having the Ombudsman's Office come in and oversee the election can go online and download the form. That unit owner, the petitioner, typically goes around the condominium requesting signatures from at least 15% of the unit owners. Once the petitioner has at least 15% of the unit owner's signature, he or she will send the petition to the ombudsman's office for review. Once the petition's validated by the ombudsman's office, an election monitor will be appointed to conduct the election for that particular condominium.
Okay, so not too difficult for the unit owner actually to print up the form and get 15% of the people involved. But, you know, let's, I guess, state what the obvious is for a moment. If there was never a claim that election fraud occurs in Florida condominiums, I guess there would never have been a need for the statute to begin with. But with all of your experience in monitoring condominium elections at this point, do you believe that there are, in fact, and you have found, you know, clear evidence of fraud in condo elections that definitely warrants sometimes an independent third party to come in and administer the election?
Absolutely.
Give us kind of examples where you've witnessed fraud in the past, you know, in some condo elections.
Well, a great number of unit owners complain that the building's management never, ever sent them the election package. I've also seen a number of envelopes that have been tampered with, but however, really, the most popular form of voting fraud that I've seen is probably double voting.
Double voting. Can you imagine? It's better than having dead people vote, I guess.
I have that, too.
You have that? I don't doubt it in Florida. But, you know, I can tell you, for one, I've actually been involved. You mentioned the case where the management company didn't send out the voting materials. I was involved in a case a couple of years back in Hialeah, and I actually tried this case in arbitration. We had a full-day trial. And we actually proved on behalf of some owners who were vocal against the board that the management company did, in fact, deliberately help throw the election by purposely failing to mail ballots to the people that were opposed to the current board and were running against them. And I got to tell you, this decision is really amazing because there's an express finding of that in the opinion by the arbitrator. So, yes, I can tell you, you know, voter fraud, ballot tampering, certainly, it's few and far between, but yes, it's real, and yes, it actually does happen sometimes. Again, this is Florida. We're kind of famous for that, right?
Yes.
All right. Now, give me a couple of reasons why an election would be held invalid if your office were to be involved.
Well, Failure to follow the procedure for giving the first notice on the date of the election shall require the association to conduct a new election.
So they failed to give that 60-day notice. That could invalidate the
election.
Exactly. Okay.
The failure of an association to mail or transmit or personally deliver a copy in a timely fashion of the information sheet of each eligible candidate, that also will invalidate an election.
Okay, gotcha. It's two reasons. Anything else?
Failure of the written ballot to indicate the names of each eligible person shall require the association to mail or transmit or deliver an amended second notice, which shall explain the need for the amended notice to include a revised ballot with the names of all the eligible persons.
Right, and I know that ballot has to be in alphabetical order as well. You don't just put the ones you want to win up top and kind of segregate the ones you want to lose at the bottom down there, right? Alphabetical order is a must.
Yes, but I do see a lot of ballots that are not in alphabetical order, actually.
Yeah, kind of put together by group even, perhaps. I've seen that before, too. But, again, the statute's pretty clear. A representative of the Florida Condominium's office can attend the annual meeting and conduct the election. That's actually what the statute says. But how about if the 15% of the owners that signed that petition, they want your office to actually get involved a little earlier in the process? For example, they want you guys to, let's say, actually have the ballots mailed back to you instead of the association or the management company. Is that something your office also does?
I used to maintain a post office box for exactly that situation, but I have to tell you, in recent years, not one association or petitioner has requested that the ballots be sent directly to me.
Okay. I guess, in all candor, I don't know if the statute would allow that at this point anyway. The statute says you're allowed to go to actually attend the actual meeting. And I guess the responsibilities may kick in at that point. But let me be honest about something. This law was passed a couple of years ago, and even more than a couple of years ago, I guess, at this point. And I believe that at that time, I was probably already conducting annual meetings for about 15 years at that point. And here's this new law that comes in, and it really, as an attorney, it took away my ability on the night of that annual meeting to conduct the election. And I'll tell you, if I'm being honest, I was kind of upset by it at first. Now, I'm wondering two things. Do you ever get resistance from boards, management companies, or even their attorneys that simply won't cooperate with the ombudsman's office, even though they were presented with proof that 15% of the owners want your office involved? And if you're appointed, is there still a role for the condominium attorney on the night of the election? You know, what's your thoughts on that?
That's a good question, Eric. I do get resistance from boards and management companies all the time. Once I receive a petition and the letter from the ombudsman's office appointing me as the election monitor, I typically phone that association to introduce myself and let them know what documents I'm going to need from them. More often than not, they refuse to take my call and they refuse to call me back. In regards to the second part of your question, yes, absolutely. I do believe there's a role to be played by the association's attorney at the election. As I proceed through the election process, I like to include the attorney, review all my findings and decisions with him or her. I think it's important for the attorney to be there. I also think the association feels a lot better knowing that you're there, too.
Yeah, and I can tell you, we've done elections before, and a questionable ballot comes up on whether or not something should be counted. Many times you'd look, hey, what's your legal opinion on this? And I absolutely believe there still is a role for the condo attorney there that night, and there's no reason why the two parties can't get along, absolutely. But let's say you're appointed to administer the election, and all of the envelopes are turned over to you on the night of the annual meeting. Really, what are you looking for to make sure that you conduct the election, you know, as close to perfect as possible? What type of problems with the envelopes or the ballots would automatically cause you to reject that vote?
Well, first, I would be checking to make sure that all the ballot envelopes have been placed in outer. All the ballot envelopes are placed in outer envelopes, and that all the outer envelopes have been sealed and signed by the unit owner or the designated voter, according to the voter certificate. I'll be checking to see that none of the envelopes have been tampered with, and that no unit owner voted more than once.
I've seen you disregard ballots, as a matter of fact, where it was obvious somebody tore it open and then tried to scotch tape it back up.
I see that all the time.
Yeah, and did a real bad job.
I see that all the time.
Yeah, and that's something I know that you disregard all the time.
I'll also be checking all the voter certificates for all corporate-owned units or units owned by multiple persons, and if the docs call for it, any trusts or estates, to make sure that the designated voter is the one who voted for that unit. I often find that someone else's name is on there altogether and they just don't match.
Right.
Once the envelopes are open, I'll be checking each ballot to make sure that no unit owner placed more than two ballots. Excuse me, to make sure that no one placed two ballots in any one envelope, and that the voting. Sorry about
yeah,
that.
Sorry.
Once the envelopes are open, I'll be checking to make sure no unit owner placed two ballots in the envelope and that no overvoting has occurred on any of the ballots. Those are the types of things I'd be looking for.
So one vote's fine, two votes probably a problem.
You know, I see sometimes they'll put three checks right. on one line for one person.
They really like they can that vote person, that. Apparently. Yeah, I understand. All right, if 15% of the unit owners sign that petition requesting an election monitor, I assume there's obviously got to be a cost associated with your office monitoring the elections. Two questions. Who pays for the cost of the election monitor, and generally, what is that cost?
The association's responsible for paying for the cost of the election monitor. My fee is $2 per unit plus $150 administrative fee. If the condominium has less than 99 units, I charge a flat rate of $300.
Okay. It's not too expensive at all, but let me ask you a real tough question for you to answer. You know, we spoke about the fact that we have a bill pending, Senate Bill 596, that would allow the Office of the Condominium Ombudsman to be expanded to now include jurisdiction and assistance with HOAs. And do you know that owners who live in HOAs, do they have the same types of complaints about their election like condominium owners do? And again, like I said, a reason I ask is at least at this moment, owners in an HOA, they don't have a right to ask for an election monitor. Only condo owners do. What's your take? Would you like to see the concept expanded so that HOA owners can get some help and assistance with this as well?
I know that owners who live in HOAs do have the same complaints. I get calls all the time from HOAs asking if I'll come and conduct their elections. I'd like to see the election process change, as a matter of fact, where HOAs are concerned. I'd like to see HOA elections conducted in the same fashion as condo elections, with no proxy voting or nominations from the floor.
Yeah,
it's much cleaner.
Of course. It's an outdated, archaic, crazy system, quite frankly, and a condo situation is much cleaner. So I just want to be clear about something. An HOA owner picks up the phone and says, hey, we understand that you can go come to a condominium election if 15% of the people sign a petition. I'm calling from an HOA. I want to have that petition going. I want your office to come and help in our HOA election. And what do you have to tell them?
Well, I generally turn down the HOA election, but I just accepted my first one.
Right. So if the unit owners want to come in or if the association voluntarily agrees, I guess it's something that they will allow you to do?
Well, it's up to me, really. I have my own company.
Right.
So it's up to me.
But there's no specific jurisdiction over the ombudsman's office over HOAs.
No, the ombudsman's office wouldn't even entertain it.
Right.
They would maybe give them my number and say call her
and
directly
call her for
and
help.
See if she's interested.
Gotcha. Okay. Please know, Nan, I really thank you sincerely for taking time out on a Sunday to speak with our listeners, and I see there's a bunch of them actually on hold that want to talk to you. I'm going to just ask you to stick around and maybe answer some calls with us. As a matter of fact, how about we go to Val in Pompano Beach? How are you, Val?
Hi, Rick. Hi, Nan.
How are you?
Hi, Val.
Pretty good. First, I want to thank you for all that you folks have done with getting some sponsors for comprehensive HOA legislation.
Thank you very much.
We finally found some sponsors who realize HOAs need to be regulated.
No two ways about it. I'm glad you think the same way.
Yeah, this legislation would go a long way to improve the quality of life for us who live in HOAs.
I hope so. That's what we're trying to accomplish, Val. Much appreciated.
Yeah. Well, in the interest of full disclosure, I have to say I trained Nan as an election monitor. Nan began conducting elections with me back in 2005. She's been at it since, and she does it well.
I know she does.
I'm going to give you a secret about her. I recall one election she conducted the day after a hurricane. When she arrived at the facility, there was no power, total darkness. Using flashlights, Nan conducted the election in a parking lot on the hood of a car.
That's true.
That's election good. Had more light on it than many HOA elections held today with all the lights on in the room.
That's great. I'm not going to do better than that line.
That's
now,
true.
So we're going to end on that. That's great.
Well,
but again,
I'll tell you, Rick, Eric, you know, the goal is always to have qualified voters vote and have their votes counted and have candidates treated fairly. And I think this program that Nan is involved in always does that.
Yes.
I think if you talk to any DPPR compliance officer involved in HOA election dispute arbitration, they'll tell you there are as many HOA protocols as there are associations in Florida.
Right.
That's a real problem.
Well, the statute, the HOA statute says, you know how you conduct your election in an HOA? Just take a look.
Yeah.
Whatever your governing document says. You know, basically,
that's right.
It's horrible. It's a really bad system.
Right.
And HOA owners should simply get the same type of relief
exactly.
and supervision that condo owners do. You know, what's funny about this piece of legislation that we have pending, quite frankly, this is actually telling the legislators, hey, ladies and gentlemen, you did a great job in the past. We're simply with condos. We're simply asking you to take what you've done well, what you've placed in the condominium statute that actually works, and simply mirror it. Bring it over to the HOA
side. Don't ignore
side.
The rest of your clients.
On the contrary, this is a compliment to the legislature. This is telling
that's
them
right.
you did a great job when it comes to condominiums. Now, please do the same great job for HOA members.
That's right.
That's the point. But again, Val, thank you so much for the call. Let's do this. Let's take our final break of the hour. Again, we're with Nan Green, appointee from the Florida Condominium Ombudsman's Office. Taking your calls, 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro. We're going right to the phones. Let's take Aiken from Coral Springs.
Hello.
Aiken, how are you? Hey, everybody got about 1 minute to get out what they want to say. Let's go.
Sure. Yes, my question is, can my representative join to the condo association meeting? That's number one question.
Can a representative of yours come to an association meeting? The Florida statute says that board meetings are basically only open to unit owners. So, again, I don't think there's any problem with a board making a rule that says only owners can attend meetings. The representative section, or I should say the Florida statute, only talks about having a representative when it comes to access to records. So let's say you're a snowbird, you live in New York for the summer, you want access to records, you can have a representative down here go to the condo's office and as your representative get access to records. That does not mean that representative of yours has a right to attend a meeting for you. So the answer to that is no. Okay, on that note, how about we go to Bill in Port Charlotte? Who are you, Bill?
Hi, Counselor.
How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. What about you? My question is, how would the Ombudsman Office handle voting, whether that's election voting or other types of voting, the problem of having the board of management controlling the outgoing envelope, returning envelopes, ballots, proxies, and other voting material?
Well, I guess Nan,
and incidentally, they refuse to show the documents for inspection.
Again, let's talk, and again, Nan Green is going to help us answer this question. But the way it's done right now, at least the way my reading of the statute is, there's nothing under the statute, even if the unit owners ask, if 15% of them get together and ask for the Ombudsman's Office involvement, the bottom line is the involvement at least starts to me on the night of the annual meeting. So that's something that you deal with all the time, Nan, verifying signatures, verifying authenticity on the night of the election to make sure the management company and or the people who sent out the election materials sent it to the right people and the right people signed them.
Well, as soon as I received the letter from the Ombudsman's Office appointing me as the election monitor, I get in touch with the association and they send me copies of the first and second notice, a copy of the ballot envelopes, and I have copies of everything. And I have to go on the principle that I believe that they're doing the right thing and that everyone is receiving a ballot. But anyone who doesn't, they still have the right to come to the election and vote at the election.
Okay, but Bill raises a good point. Suppose, for example, your office is asked to get involved. You serve with the 15% petition, and it's obvious that the manager blew the deadline. They sent out totally wrong, incorrect notices. The ballots aren't in alphabetical order, or they did everything wrong. Is your office going to say, wait a minute, before we have an annual election, we need to make sure this is done over and done right?
Well, 2 weeks, 14 days before the election, the second notice has to go out.
Right.
And 14 days before the election, I get in touch with that association and I receive a copy of everything that they sent out to the association. The first thing I do is look through all those materials. If the ballot is out of order, I immediately get in touch with the ombudsman's office and I fax them over a copy of the ballot and I let them know. I tell them all of the problems that I find, and it's up to them to determine whether a ballot will or will not be invalidated.
Okay,
an election will be invalidated.
Okay, so Bill, it's obviously, it's not a, certainly not, from what I'm hearing, certainly not a rubber stamp of the election procedures that were used before the ombudsman's office gets in. Certainly when the ombudsman's office does get in, they're looking to see whether or not the procedures up to that point were done correctly or incorrectly. And I hope that answers your question. Again, running out of time. How about we go to Hector in Brickell Key? How are you, Hector?
Eric, first of all, I want to thank Nan Green and yourself for the great job. Actually, Nan has done a great job in our building as well. My real question is, what can unit owner, what remedies does a unit owner have when you catch the association, the management company, as well as the professionals who are sort of licensed with their hand in the cookie jar in reference to tampering with election funds? What really are the remedies?
Okay.
Thank
you. A couple of things. No, thank you, Hector. Thank you. A couple of things. Number one, from a legal perspective, needless to say, if something goes wrong with an election and a unit owner can show that there was some sort of irregularity or even fraud, needless to say, you can always file an arbitration for a petition for arbitration after the election is over, although there's now some pending legislation that would attempt to limit a person's right to file that arbitration petition if not done within 60 days of the annual election. Problem with that statute, as I see it, is that oftentimes the owner doesn't even get access to those records, the election records, within 60 days. So it would be fair to have a 60-day drop-dead time limit if the owner's still fighting on day 58 to get access to those records. That's number one. So the answer to your question is you can file an arbitration petition and then wind up going to court. Number two, you can always file a complaint against that CAM's license. That's something that can certainly be done, but it looks like we are being told that time is about up. Great show today. Nan,
yes,
thank you so much for joining us today. Much appreciate your time on a Sunday.
Thank you, Eric. It's been a pleasure.
All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to another week of Condo Craze and HOAs. See you again, same time next week.